From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, The Nature of Dreams, and of course, Open Lines, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Here's what's happening. The Space Shuttle Discovery and its seven astronauts took a cross-country detour and landed safely in California after stormy weather prevented them from returning home to Florida. For the second day in a row, Discovery swooped through the sky and touched down at Edwards Air Force Base an hour before sunset, ending its delivery trip to the International Space Station. On this Patriots Day, in the eighth anniversary of 9/11, a Washington, D.C. boat exercise sparks alarm and confusion. A morning of remembrance turned into one of the flashbacks, fear, and media mishaps Friday when a Coast Guard exercise unfolding near Pentagon ceremonies marking the 9/11 anniversary was mistaken as an attack. The false reports of gunfire on the river briefly shook the Capitol, sending FBI agents to the scene and grounding flights. But the exercise involving speedboats and at least one helicopter probably would have passed unnoticed, except that two television networks confused the simulated chatter over a Coast Guard radio for actual events and reported that the Coast Guard had opened fire on a suspicious vessel near ceremonies attended by President Barack Obama. Nonetheless, the Coast Guard should never have done this exercise on a 9/11 anniversary day. Two British thugs who punched a young man so hard surgeons had to remove half of his skull. They've escaped charges. Steve Gator, 26 years old, had been told the teenagers who ambushed him will not face court after the British Crown Prosecution Service dropped the case. The two thugs started screaming taunts and abuse at him about his cousin. But when he confronted them, he was hit so hard he fell back, smashed his head on the pavement, and had half his skull removed. In Aspen, Colorado, a man was attacked by a large black bear in his home. In the latest string of violent encounters with the animals this summer in the mountain community, the Colorado Division of Wildlife spokesperson Randy Hatman said that the man had gone to the first floor of his home to check out on his three barking dogs when the bear smacked him in the head. The man did not suffer life-threatening injuries and was being treated at a local hospital. The bear escaped. They're looking for it. Sophisticated computer scans of fossils have helped solve a mystery over the nature of a giant ancient raptor known as the Haast's eagle, which became extinct about 500 years ago. The researchers say that they have determined that the eagle, which lived in the mountains of New Zealand and weighed about 40 pounds, was a predator and not a mere scavenger, as many thought. Much larger than modern eagles, Haast's eagle would have swooped down to prey on flightless birds and possibly even the rare, unlucky human. They said it ate humans. Although she liked bacon crispy and her chicken fried, she never drank or smoked. And Gertrude Baines, the world's oldest person, died in Los Angeles at the age of 115. Describing a life that lasted an astonishing 115 years, earned her the title of the oldest person on the planet. At 107, she ended up going into a nursing home after breaking a hip. Strange weather patterns these days. As a matter of fact, several days ago in Argentina, a violent storm described as a freak tornado killed at least 17 people. Robert Felix, not by fire, but by ice. My, oh, my. Robert, what's going on?
Oh, George, you know, we're just not getting the truth, and I wish we were. You know, you were talking about that tornado. But, you know, the Arctic sea ice, which we keep hearing about, is melting. 500,000 square kilometers more than at this same time last year. That's 190,000 square miles.
You know, I had a guest on last night who agrees with you that we're in the early stages of an ice age.
Ah, who was that?
His name is Thrunvalo Melchizedek.
I will try to write that down.
Write down that name and remember it.
But, you know, well, then maybe he talked about, but we've been having record lows. On August 30th, we had record lows in 14 states. I didn't see it mentioned in the papers. August 31st, record lows in 18 states. September 1st, record lows in 21 states.
What kind of winter are we going to have?
You know, I'm worried because we're also coming into an El Nino, which is going to be sending a lot more moisture into the sky. And we've got these cooler skies that are coming from the lack of sunspots. I fear that we're going to have a very snowy winter.
I think so, too. I think when it happens, Robert, it's going to happen big time. Robert Felix, his book, Not by Fire, But by Ice. Everybody talks about the weather, right? But Frank Batten did something about it. Batten, he's died at the age of 82, created the Weather Channel, fulfilling an ancient human curiosity about all things meteorological as cable television was emerging. The National Forecasting Network, which includes reports of local weather conditions, now available in an estimated 101.7 million U.S. homes. Writer and producer Larry Gelbart, most known for his work on the hit television series MASH, has died in his Beverly Hills home. He was 81. He died of cancer. Throughout his career, Gelbart developed a portfolio of more than 40 works spanning radio, television, theater, and film. His fascination with radio as a child inspired him and influenced his evolving career. In a moment, through the eyes of astrologer Mark Lerner, we will take a look at the astrological world next on Coast to Coast AM. Mark Lerner graduated from Michigan State University, honors in a BA in social science. His book, Welcome to Planet Earth, reached thousands of astrological students and professionals around the world and became a very well-respected book. And also he, one of the top experts in the field of astrology. Here he is this hour on Coast to Coast. Mark Lerner, back on Coast to Coast. Hi. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Great. Thanks for having me on, George.
My pleasure. What's new with you?
Oh, well, I'm still doing my Earth Aquarius News website and reaching a lot of people, and every day the cosmic calendar is out there guiding folks, and otherwise I'm writing my articles and studying everything from the price of gold to what's happening in the war in Afghanistan and the election results and why the presidency is sort of like a little bit weird these days.
I will look at some of those things. Give me some information about the next few months leading into 2010.
Well, actually, today was rather significant. Of course, you were sharing some important news, but gold, as an example, hung in there for the last couple of days. People were wondering whether gold would end the week over 1,000 or not. So this is kind of unusual, but today is one of 2 days in the calendar year when the outer planet Pluto is what we call stationary or not moving from the Earth's point of view. And when you have that situation, whatever celestial body is not moving, and for instance, many people are born when planets are not moving, and then those archetypes become very strong in their life purpose. So for today, Pluto is a planet that can represent extreme riches or extreme losses. So over the weekend, as people are sort of scratching their heads in the various markets around the world, wondering, you know, is this the beginning of that big boom for gold or not? So it's going to be very interesting, because for a metal and a currency like gold to finally sort of make that move, even though it's already gone over 1,000 a year and a half ago, and then it's been flirting with that, it has to kind of sustain this marker maybe for several weeks or several months for all the gold bugs to think it's finally going to make that big move.
What did you think of 999?
Well, of course, Obama gave his speech on that day, which is interesting because a lot of people felt he wasted a lot of time. He should have given a lot earlier. But here's the interesting thing. This is Virgo. We're in the 30-day cycle when the sun is in Virgo, and Virgo is, of all the 12 zodiacal signs, the key sign of medicine and health. And so 2009 kind of represents, even of course with the numerology, lifting yourself up as high as you can get on the primary numbers, because 10 really is 1, but on a higher level. And so we had all these 9s there, and it was almost as if this is the final shot for the President of the United States, with all these previous presidents, particularly President Clinton, and with all the fighting against him, to summon up enough strength and energy to see if that speech could perhaps pull in a couple of extra supporters to make this thing happen.
So a couple of people tell me Mercury is in retrograde, and you say that as well. What does that mean?
Well, unfortunately, in the astrology field, and this, as soon as anyone gets into astrology, George, one of the first things through the internet or books that they might read, or maybe your friend tells them, oh, don't do this, don't sign any papers, Mercury's going retrograde. Three times in a calendar year for 3 weeks at a time, from the Earth's point of view, it seems as though the planet Mercury, first planet from the sun, which has a lot to do with signings, agreements, communications, it really rules over our five senses, how we think and how we communicate. It appears to be moving in reverse for about a three-week period. Now, the current one started on September 6th and will run through the morning of September 29th. And so it does this three times a year for 3 weeks at a time. But I have written for so long that it isn't Mercury that's causing people's problems. It's the fact that we need to review and reevaluate what we're doing, what we're thinking about, our messages, everything that has to do with classes and education and business. We need to review and reflect for that three-week period rather than being too gung-ho. And then when we come out of it, for instance, on September 29th, then we can start saying, okay, here's what I've learned in the last couple of weeks, and now I can go forward and I can do things more sensibly and more clearly.
Have you noticed, Mark, how many people seem to be acting very strangely lately?
When you say lately, what are you saying?
Oh, in the last 6 months, maybe.
Well, let me give you an interesting thing about the calendar year 2009, and this could fit into the great woman who brings in your numerology so often. On the first day of this year, okay, remember I brought up the fact that today Pluto was motionless, which enhances that Pluto archetype, which is a planet of extremes. Well, on New Year's Day, and it's not every New Year's that we have a planet that stops, we had Saturn stop in the sign of Virgo, which is a sign when it's negative, where there's a lot of kind of internal worry and a kind of, Virgo is an excellent sign for being analytical, to really be a scholar, to study things very carefully. But when there is a shadow side, and this is what we're all dealing with, I mean, in one form or another, everybody around the planet, particularly in the financial world, it's very rare that a calendar year on January 1 would start when a planet, such a major planet like Saturn, it wasn't retrograding, it was not moving. And Saturn actually controls the financial world on a certain very high level, and the shadow side is fear. So I think that when you're saying what you just said, what's happening is a lot of people are either in the grip of major fear because they have relatives, they may have friends, colleagues who've lost jobs. They don't know if the axe could fall for themselves. You know, you never know, like one thing topples in one industry and a banking thing, and then mm-hmm. that hits something else. And you might think you're immune, but then before you know it, anything could happen.
So how do we know, Mark, when we're going to get out of it? When does this thing like push its way away from us?
Well, and here's the interesting point. When you just said a few moments ago, have people been acting strangely? What was interesting is when Saturn made that station on New Year's Day affecting all of us, it had to go in reverse for several months, then shifted around, started going forward, and just in the last 3 weeks, has come back to that same spot that it made the shift. So I think when you ask that question, actually, maybe recently there's been an uptick in that kind of bizarre behavior. You know, for instance, I don't know how much your audience people listen to some of the reporting that happens on a daily basis, like places like Bloomberg and these
they
other.
They are into everything, Mark.
Well, when it's an amazing thing when you look at things like the stock market, how it's almost like an entity when we think of like the New York Stock Exchange, and it opens, and the psychology of fear and of hope and of, you know, picking up on things that happen in Asia overnight. But more than that, stories. And you get a kind of thing where the market will go up hundreds of points, and it looks as if it's ready to break new ground. And then some rumor will happen, whether it's true or not. And suddenly everybody's wringing their hands saying, you know, we can't sustain this incredible recovery. And then it goes backwards. And then everybody wakes up another day and say, wait a second, things are better. Like you hear all the time now what I think is kind of a false reporting, like the recession is over, like in the last 3 or 4 days, or even the last week or so, whether it's Secretary Geithner, people within the president's inner circle and other places, hesitantly maybe trying to say the recession is over. How is the recession over for so many people who have lost their jobs, the millions of people? It's certainly not over for them.
It's not over for them, not at all. You know, we look at a lot of crisis states, Mark, but how about moments of enlightenment? I mean, do you do that too? Do you say, hey, in this period, things are going to be great for people?
Well, how about you and your chart on February 15th of 2010?
February 15th?
Yeah, February 15th of next year. I was looking at your chart as an example. Well, this is a good point. You just brought this up. For instance, every 12 years, each individual will have the largest planet, Jupiter, come back in their chart, regardless of whether it's rising, setting, above, below, whatever sign of the zodiac. We all have, every 12 years, an opportunity to sort of shoot for the moon, to have expanding all of our consciousness, open up to a whole new direction, have good fortune and good luck as a kind of extra buddy in our corner. So you have Jupiter in the sign of Pisces, one of the traditional signs that Jupiter has always ruled, and it will come back to Pisces, and exactly on that day, February 15th of next year, you will have what we call a Jupiter return, and that sets the ball going for like another 12 years on everything from business, education, reaching more people through the radio and inspiring more individuals.
8 years in Afghanistan, 6.5 years in Iraq. When does it end, astrologically speaking?
Well, I just recently took a look. I was kind of hesitant to go back about this because I just couldn't really believe that. And I've always been open to the hope that President Obama and the different people within his administration would not get as bogged down in something. If you look back, he was born the president in 1961, the first year of the Kennedy administration. And with everything that happened to President Kennedy, and we were beginning to pull out from Vietnam, and then we had that disaster in 1963 with the president, mm-hmm. and then suddenly we're mired in Vietnam. Now what's happened, we've had all these years in Iraq. He said, okay, we're pulling out. And meanwhile, we're putting in more troops in Afghanistan. The British were never able to do anything there. The Russians had a war for 10 years. In fact, that whole war was the thing that eventually turned Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda against America. I mean, in many ways, that was kind of a turning point at the end of that war. And now we're back there, and it turns out that you have to go back to October 7 of 2001 was the day that we started military influences there. And I have a chart for that. Astrologers can look at a horoscope for the beginning of hostilities of any war or battle. And it just shows that we're entrenched in something that is going to be unbelievably costly. I don't see personally, looking at this chart, where you hear all these generals say, well, it's winnable if you do this or that. I just don't see those kinds of things.
Do you see us ever getting out of there?
Well, I mean, if some very big decisions are going to have to be made soon, and, you know, Democrats are right now getting very worried. It's not so much the Republicans, it's the Democrats who are beginning to look at some of the reports. And George Will was one of the conservative columnists who recently, he started the ball rolling because he said, we shouldn't be there. So that was on the right. He suddenly had that. But a lot of more left-leaning people are saying, what are we doing there? Because that's going to give enormous amount of funds. And they keep talking about having to send more troops and just the whole terrain. But more than that, from an astrological viewpoint, George, I work with what is called relocation astrology, or what's called astrocartography. And that works not just for people, where people can be moved from one place to another. If you're traveling, you do business, an astrologer can take your birth chart and move you to another place to see whether another area of the country or the world would be more auspicious for you. Well, it turns out that the United States has a birth chart, and it's not auspicious for us to be in the Persian Gulf or to be in Afghanistan because of the way the chart dynamics fall in that part of the world.
All right, we're going to be with you in just a moment, Mark. Mark's website, earthaquariusnews.com. A couple works out there, too, Inner Child Cards and Baseball Tarot. Now, we're going to come back and take phone calls with you. Perhaps Mark can set you on a path of greatness. You just never know. And like I was saying, for the last 6 months at least, and I don't think it's just because of the economy, people have been acting weird. I mean, weird. Man, I saw a guy driving today in L.A.? You would think he was going to a fire, except he was cutting off people left and right, and man, strange times. I'll be back in a moment. Special night tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Later on, open lines. We'll be right back. Well, manning the Coast to Coast desk this Saturday and Sunday night, none other than Ian Punnett. What do you got in store for us, Ian?
Wait, George, if you're playing the Psychedelic Furs, does that mean tomorrow night I have to play Pat Boone? I mean, we have like a bumper exchange program. Psych Furs, much more like what I would be playing.
Pat Boone is a good singer.
I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you.
Nobody else has the guts to play him. I do.
I want to hear The Cure. Next hour, The Cure. Okay. We got a bunch of stuff going on this weekend.
Whippersnapper.
And then hi to Mark Lerner, too. He's a great guy.
Yes.
A rogue wave has hit a ship 2 football fields long, and our friend Captain Sweeney has got all of the latest details on what happened. It's pretty amazing. Cliff Pickover will expand all of our minds with his new book about math, but math unlike any way you've ever looked at it before. And then on Sunday night, there's a new collection of monster legends and ghost stories researched by a historical society. We'll talk about that. And then Gary Patterson last week told us about the newly opened murder investigation into the death of Rolling Stones founder Brian Jones. So we went and we found the person who's credited with shaking the cobwebs off the Brian Jones case file. He'll tell us who he thinks killed Brian Jones and why Sunday night on Coast to Coast 2. So
super.
Big weekend ahead.
Enjoy it and the moment. Back in a moment with Mark Lerner and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast astrologer Mark Lerner, our guest this hour. Mark, what's this brilliant-looking celestial body that we see every night?
Jupiter.
That's it, the big one.
Jupiter is just marvelous. A couple of weeks ago, was what we would consider an opposition in the sky if we take the Earth and the solar system. And I love astronomy as much as I love astrology because they both used to be part of the same area of study. And so what happens is now for several months when the sun sets, Jupiter rises. And so we see this beautiful, like a lot of people would think, what's that star? Well, that's Jupiter, the largest planet in the solar system.
Let's go to a first-time caller in Albany, Oregon, not New York. First-time caller, Gary. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Hey, George, how you doing?
Good.
Nice talking with you. Hey, I just wanted to bring something to your attention. I was playing around with the name Barack Hussein Obama. Longtime fan, listen all the time, the whole story. And if you scramble the letters around, one of the anagrams you get is Arab Sheikh Mabus Akan.
No way.
Way. Do it.
All right.
I'm spelling Sheikh, S-H-E-I-K. I think that's right, but...
Yeah, they spell it 2 different ways. Sometimes they add an H to it, too. All right, Mark, you're an astrologer. You don't dabble with letters and words, but...
Yeah. No, I actually do. Quite frankly, I mean, letters and numbers and names are all really part of the whole thing.
You do it all, okay.
Well, the reason is that actually every planet has connections to certain numbers more than others, okay? So, like, for instance, just to take traditional things, the sun is always more connected to 1, and the moon is always more connected to 2. Traditionally, Jupiter, which was connected a lot to the Trinity, related a lot to 3. You could go down the whole number system, like 6 relating to Venus and so on. But let me make a point about President Obama because of that call. I wanted to say this earlier. Part of the whole problem, I mean, astrologers have been worried about this ever since the inauguration was, and when I was on the show New Year's, I pointed this out, we have a void, one of these void of course lunar cycles at the exact moment he took that first inauguration moment. Remember, there was a second one a couple of days later because
there was a little flub there.
Right, exactly. We have... This is the reason when everybody's going out there and it's like there's part of what you're talking about too. When you said what's going on, when he took that oath, the moon was in the last degree of Scorpio. In fact, it's the exact sun position from when President Kennedy lost his life in Dallas. So there's a very weird connection between the start of this administration with a person who was born in the first year of the Kennedy administration, August of 1961, and he takes the oath when the moon is passing over the same point where the sun was on November 22nd, 1963. Now, I'm only bringing this up because a void of course moon at the start of anything big, like an inauguration and a four-year term, the usual meaning is certain things will not get accomplished even though you're putting in enormous energies. And that's, unfortunately, a lot of what's going on, whether it's healthcare, whether the stimulus package, trying to get jobs back in there, and we're losing more jobs. Everything that you're trying to do that's positive, there's this shadow side.
When should they have had the inauguration?
This is the problem with our society and our Constitution. People say we need a rigid Constitution. Because of having to have a president take an oath of office exactly at noon on January 20th every 4 years, what happens is, regardless of any planetary picture, you can't change it. This was at 12:31. If they could have said, you know what, let's move the thing 30 minutes, 31 minutes, we wouldn't have this particular disadvantage for this president.
Would you have recommended that?
Absolutely. But you can't change anything. It's not possible. You know, if an inauguration, you know, I don't know if everybody knows how this works. If January 20th is on a Sunday, you know what happens? Privately, we don't see the inauguration, but inside, the oath shifting takes place. Okay, so the new president gets sworn in, whether it's a Sunday or not, and then they do it publicly on the 21st, which would be, say, a Monday. This is because of the Constitution adding whatever that amendment was that shifted the date. See, it used to be presidents were inaugurated March 4th, but then during the Roosevelt administration, the first president to be inaugurated January 20th was Franklin Roosevelt in 1937 because of the law that was passed. So constitutionally, this is every inauguration chart is set in stone. It's for noon or within a minute or two either way when the president takes the oath, and the astrology be damned. That's what it's all about.
Okay, let's go next to British Columbia. Allison, you're up with us. Hey, Allison.
Oh, hi. Yeah, wow, that was fast. Great to talk to you.
Hold
guys.
On, let me put you back on hold. I'll get you. No, I'm kidding.
Oh. Okay, George, yeah, you're funny. I guess I want to just clarify, if I give my birthday, do I could get some insight as to what will be coming up for me in the future, or?
Not really. I mean, the thing is, I'm not one of these persons where somebody says 3, 17, 19, whatever it is, and suddenly I know everything. I wish I could do that, but it wouldn't actually take too long, but I'd have to probably be fooling around with charts, and we'd have to have a lot more time to do it, to be fair to everybody.
Right, okay, I misunderstood, because I checked with the person who answered the phone, and he thought, yes. Well.
Okay, thanks. Next up, we go to Seattle, Washington. Hey, Douglas, go ahead.
Hey, George, it's great to talk to you.
I think you are
a really great talk show host. Best replacement Art Bell could have possibly have gotten.
Well, that's very kind of you.
I have two quick questions. Well, two quick statements. The Hadron Collider.
Yes.
They say that they can possibly create a black hole with that.
They could. Little mini ones.
I think they're some of the most intelligent people. I think it's neat that they actually can recreate the Big Bang, but yet they don't know whether it's going to create a black hole or not. That's kind of scary.
And they still can't get the thing to work.
Yeah.
But soon, I guess.
Can I make a
second?
Comment?
Yeah, go ahead.
Second thing.
That reminds me of July 16th, 1945, when we had the Trinity blast in New Mexico, which was the first atomic
test.
In a sense, destruction going off, even though it wasn't over a city. They didn't know whether the atmosphere would be ignited during that
and
one.
They
that was
thought that was a there. Possibility.
Right. So we got another thing where we might create a black hole. Go ahead.
Go ahead. And you've got something.
Oh, okay. Else. Yeah, the second thing is the missile to the moon. They want to shoot a missile at the moon to find out if there's water there.
That's going to happen next month.
Could that possibly, you know, put the moon off of its orbit?
No, it's not going to be that big.
Yeah.
It won't have that kind of an effect.
Is that possibly a cover-up that they might hit the exact spot where they never landed to begin with?
No, they landed. Believe me, they landed.
Well, with the void of course moon, one of the most challenging things in astrology, and one of the most extreme void of course moons for this administration, they better be very careful what they do with NASA and what they do with aiming anything at the moon.
Well, that's, you know, there is a controversy here that they're going to do this.
Yeah.
And, you know, who knows how big in terms of crater size this is going to be.
It would be, you know, always good to know on that score, of course.
More callers. Let's go to Spokane, Washington, east of the Rockies. Why east of the Rockies? Because he's on the special line. Go ahead, Richard. Are you with us?
Yeah.
There you
George?
Go. Yep.
Yeah, I'm a long-time listener. It turns out I think I might have clicked for you in the Navy after all.
Super.
You never know. Anyways, I just wanted to say last night was a really interesting show. I mean, with that Duan Valos take on the mantle of the Earth after the 14-day cycle and how it could turn into molten magma and then the plate tectonics of the Earth could just shift.
Oh, yeah, he was right on. But what's your question for Mark here?
Well, I just wondered what his thoughts would be on that sort of a take, what he might think that, is that a reality or is that a possibility or not?
Well, let me answer. I had a list of a couple of dates coming up here. This sort of fits into your question a little bit, and I didn't hear that show. But Tuesday, when we go from Monday into Tuesday, September 14th to 15th, we're having another one of these Saturn-Uranus oppositions going on. And those two planets are sort of strange bedfellows. They don't get along very much. And we've already had two oppositions between them, and they create a whole lot of kind of explosiveness and destructiveness in terms of interactions. And this also answers partly what you've been bringing up, George, about people acting weirdly and strangely. When the last time those two planets were opposite, were in the mid-60s when we had the civil rights movements and a lot of the destruction. In fact, remember in Detroit back in the
day. I was there.
Well, that was when those two planets were opposite the last time. And now they're opposing each other again five times. And believe it or not, the first one happened on the day of the election. So the first of five, they won't end until the summer, next summer. And so we are going through a kind of a cycle that only happens about every 45 years. And it stretches people because relationships are much more kind of on a nerve-wracking kind of edginess. And when you have two planets opposite in the sky, what that means is they're pulling on the Earth, they're pulling on humanity, they're pulling on our sort of psychic atmosphere, and this makes a lot of people go off the deep end. It's kind of like having a full moon every day for like a year and a half.
We've got Nancy in Chico, California, west of the Rockies. Nancy, hello.
Hi, George. It's so nice to talk to you, and I had to change my question because the other lady had called about your birth date, so I won't ask that. But I was just going to ask Mark, for Aries, is there any specific time next year that is a good month for Aries?
Well, okay, if a person were born in early Aries, what's going to happen is Jupiter, I mentioned earlier that Jupiter will be in Pisces, which is a traditional sign that Jupiter ruled along with Sagittarius. What happens is on June 7th of 2010, Jupiter sort of goes into the Aries window, the fire sign of Aries, so it will affect people born, say, in a very good way or a potentially positive way, people born around March 20th, even maybe March 19th, March 20th to about the March 23rd or 24th through most of the rest of the summer. And then following that, the Aries people are going to get a major dose of all the good, inspiring, expansive Jupiterian energy the last week of January of 2011 through May of 2011, affecting every Aries on the planet in a good way.
Okay, very good. And thanks for the call, Nancy. We go next to Paris, California. Brenda's up with us. Hey, Brenda.
Hi, good evening. Thank you for taking my call,
sure
Mark
thing.
And George. I'm a Scorpio. I'm 26 years old, and I like astrology. It's fun. So I have just a really quick question. I'm pursuing my career in medicine, and right. I'm going to school right now full-time, but I'm mostly working part-time, and I have a little girl who's a year and 5 months old. So I just wanted to ask Mark, like, what can I do, or how can astrology help me to stay focused in what I want to do?
Okay, well, that's a great Scorpio in general. It depends on where in the horoscope that Scorpio is focused. If you happen to be born, and I'm not saying you have to have this in order to be a great doctor, say, but if the Scorpio is particularly at the top, if you were born around noon or 1 o'clock, then that helps boost career as a surgeon or somebody who might be a psychiatrist or get into kind of healing and counseling. And another great thing that's going to happen with this Jupiter in Pisces next year is everyone who is a water sign, okay, a Cancer sun sign and a Scorpio sun sign, as well as a Pisces sun sign, will get a flowing energy coming from Jupiter, because Jupiter will be in the water sign Pisces. So the other water signs benefit by kind of an enrichment of life and feelings of greater success. That'll be very strong starting in the third week of January that Jupiter goes into Pisces. The date is January 18th and 19th, and that runs for several months.
One of my daughters is a Taurus, and she is bullheaded. How did this happen?
How did this happen? You know, I will tell you, I will give you a slightly different answer. You have Venus in Taurus. That's how it happened. You have the planet of love.
Don't blame me.
You have the planet of love and sensitivity. I was going to tell you this. Here's another date for you. April 3rd next year is your Venus return in the sign of Taurus. So what you want to do is not only have, that'll be a Saturday, it's a weekend. Remember, write this down, George. April 3rd is a fantastic other date aside from February 15th. Good for art, social activity, anything cultural, business, and sharing with your daughter and having something positive to that bullheaded daughter of yours.
But you're blaming me for her bullheadedness.
Well, one of my daughters happens to be an earth sign, but she is more Virgo, and the other one is more of the sign of Cancer. So I have earth and water in my life for daughters.
Next up, we go to Ed in Allentown, Pennsylvania. Hey, Ed, go ahead.
Morning, George.
Hey.
Excellent show.
Thanks.
I wish your guests would stay on later. Anyway.
You will be back.
Oh, great. Two questions. Is location where you are in life, if it opposes anything in your horoscope, is that possible? I mean, like, does horoscope work that way? Like, if you're in the wrong place, your career is going to go bad. And should I, like, for instance, I'm 122263, and I live in eastern Pennsylvania. Should I be living somewhere else?
Let me give you a 30-second answer. You have to know the time of birth. The astrologer creates the whole chart. We take a look at what's rising, setting, up, and down. But we need the time. Then we take a look at, is there anything conflicting, like perhaps a shadow type of influence from a Saturn or a Mars or a Pluto, which might be unfavorable. Venus and Jupiter strong would be favorable. If we don't find Venus, Jupiter, maybe the Sun, in an angle that is helping you in, say, in Pennsylvania, that area, then we need to find another place for you, because I have seen situations where people are either born in a place and it is not good, or they've moved to a place, and since they don't know the astrology, they've inadvertently moved to a place that isn't good for their health or business or making money.
Mark, tell me about the Earth Aquarius news. We only got a minute left.
Okay, Earth Aquarius news. Astrology, we've got an extended cosmic calendar. It's easy to understand. It gives people guidance every day of what's happening in the sky. And, you know, I do these calendars every year, and we have a new one coming out, the Mark Lerner 2010 Astrological Guide. So that's a big thing. And I'm going to put together my sort of Obama report card with this whole thing about the inauguration and some other big things. The final thing is that we will have Jupiter. I've mentioned Jupiter a lot. Moving forward, let's end on a positive note here for tonight. October 12th into October 13th, coming up in almost exactly a month, Jupiter goes from reverse to forward, and that's going to help people as we get into the second half of October, November, December, at least to start thinking more hopefully and positively of being more successful with whatever work they're doing in the world.
Hey, I love October. Midwest, favorite time of the year.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful there.
I mean, it's not Thanksgiving, it's not Christmas, but weather-wise, you can't beat it. All right, Mark, thanks for being on the program.
I appreciate it.
Up next, we're going to be bringing in a dream coach to talk about dreaming and also take your phone calls as well. And then we'll have 2 hours of open lines for you tonight on Coast to Coast AM. Plus, an interesting hotline we're going to open up. I'll tell you about that in about an hour or so. A dear friend of mine, great talk show host in the St. Louis area. He had retired a few years ago. Well, he died a week or so ago, and he did something on the air once that people will never forget, and I'll tell you about that, but I'm going to open up a hotline like he did, and we'll see what happens. I'll be back.